Whether you're an emerging leader, whether you want to be a leader, whether you're a formal leader within your organization of any rank, or you're the brand new firefighter, like I said, that the community sees as leaders from day one. I would say that every day you have an opportunity to make a difference, to make someone feel appreciated, valued, understood, and cared for. And that every day you will encounter people who are battling through something you might know nothing about. Compassion does not take any clinical competence. It only takes intentionality that says, I care and I'm here. They may not remember the words you said, but they will always remember how you made them feel. And we lead people and we manage processes. It's never the opposite.
The First Responder Liaison Network is proud to present to you the Kitchen Table Podcast. Join us as we explore leadership from perspectives around the globe, from firefighters to fire chiefs, civilians to CEOs. Our conversations have one simple goal: build more leaders.
Good afternoon. Today we are back in Gig Harbor, Washington, as we have Deputy Chief Nick Langlo on the show. And the theme we're talking today is human skills of leadership. We're also going to talk leadership versus management, how they are different, but yet both necessary. We're also going to talk about how leaders have flaws and leaders are still learning. Thank you for tuning in today to episode 69 of The Kitchen Table. Nick Langlo is the Deputy Chief of Operations for Gig Harbor Fire and Medic One. Gig Harbor is a five-station, fully paid fire department in Washington State that serves a population of approximately 55,000 people and runs approximately 7,500 calls for service. They provide fire response, EMS and paramedic response, and transport, as well as technical rescue, wildland, and more. Chief Langlo started his career with Gig Harbor in 2003 as a volunteer and was hired full-time in 2006. He has served in the ranks of firefighter, lieutenant, battalion chief, and now deputy chief. Nick has been married to his wife, Nicole, for 17 years and has two children, a 13-year-old boy and an 11-year-old girl. Chief Langlo and his wife grew up in Gig Harbor and are proud to be raising their family in the very community that he serves. Good afternoon, Chief. How are you today on this, I'm sure, beautiful day out there in Gig Harbor?
I'm great. It is a beautiful day in Gig Harbor. I'm sitting in my office looking out the window and it's blue sky and there's green in the trees. It's full spring here.
It's full on spring. I know I'm actually looking out my window and I can't even see a cloud. So what a beautiful month, because it's May 1st. So yeah, beautiful spring day. So I'm getting the sense here that Gig Harbor has some phenomenal leaders. I say that now because Gig Harbor, I can confidently say that Gig Harbor Fire now has the most guests on the kitchen table than any other fire department. So thank you for taking up Chief Booth's leadership challenge. That's how we're able to have this conversation today. But before we begin, would you mind sharing a little bit about Deputy Chief Nick Langlo before we go?
Sure, of course, yeah. So I'm 42. I just turned 42 about a month ago. Kind of skipped the birthday. You know, it's just another day on the calendar anymore.
I hear you. Mine's in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
I hear you.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday. So I turned 42.
Yeah, you as well.
Like part of my bio said, I grew up in Gig Harbor. I've been here my whole life. I started going to school in Gig Harbor as a kindergartner. I went through the whole public school system, K through 12 in Gig Harbor, and got a four-year bachelor's degree at the University of Washington. So nice. Purple and gold, full Husky.
Yes,
nothing against Washington State, but it is the second best school in the
second
state.
Second best. I would agree.
For sure. And then about halfway through my bachelor's, I'd gotten an associate's, and then about halfway through the last 2 years of school, I got hired on full time at Gig Harbor Fire. And so I'd been a volunteer, like we talked about, and started in 2003, and then got hired full time. Quit going to UW-Tacoma at about 50 or 60 credits left, and then got hired at the fire department. And then my dad said, hey, I'm not going to pay for it, but you need to go back and finish your school. You're too close not to.
Wow.
And so I've been a pleaser my whole life, which is a whole nother podcast topic probably.
Yeah.
Going through that, but I did go back and I finished my 4-year degree, which I'm super proud of. And yeah, got a bachelor's degree in interdisciplinary arts and sciences from UW and in political economy. And I tell people that it got me my 4-year degree finished without having to do lab science or math. So they're like, why political economy? So that's kind of why.
Wow, there you go. There's a secret there.
Yeah. And Gig Harbor's been awesome. I'm super, super partial, right? It's the only place I've ever worked. I think it's the greatest place to work in the world, but I also know that there's a lot of great fire departments out there. I would definitely double down and say that that being a firefighter's got to be the best job in the world, other than maybe like a fighter pilot, I think would be pretty cool. But I've been super blessed in the fire department. I made so many awesome relationships with people in and outside of the Gig Harbor Fire Department that have kind of shaped me and guided me and like who I've become. I think that's probably pretty common in the fire service, right? We just have such a what I think is such a unique opportunity to like live life together and like through life together. We're raising kids together, we're doing stuff outside of work together, we're around the kitchen table, pun intended with your the podcast,
Absolutely. Thank
right?
you. Thank
But
you.
yeah, for sure. We're at the kitchen table doing life together. And just the community aspect of the fire service just been amazing. Super blessed and super glad to be here and have no idea what I'm doing on a podcast, but I'm happy to be here and happy to start talking.
I appreciate that. You're on the podcast simply because a great leader said that you would be someone that could add to the show, and that's why you're here. So thank you. One of the main topics we are going to talk about, and I'm going to start with this, something that you had mentioned when we were, going back and forth, was leaders have flaws and leaders make mistakes regularly and leaders are still learning. And that's, I mean, how true is that statement? I certainly make mistakes every day, but regarding this being one of your talking points, can you lean on the concept of leaders always learn and why flaws are just a part of the process?
I was given a presentation. So I got promoted to Deputy Chief Operations in January. And our training division chief had asked me if I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking to our officers at the beginning of January. So all of our officer corps, company and chief officers get together once a month, first Wednesday of the month for officer training. We'll get updates from the fire chief. We'll have a training topic, strategy and tactics. And so thought it was a pretty good kind of target-rich environment or opportunity for me to sit down or stand up, but in front of them and kind of address the group, like, hey, I know you guys have known Nick for a long time, some of you guys for 20 years, but I'm in a new role. And, maybe some of the, things that are important to me, or I want to know some of the things that are important to you, right? And you can tell me, like, you're kind of given the opportunity, like, hey, gang up on me. There's 30 of you and one of me. So why don't you fire away some ideas and things you want us to get better at, things you want us to make sure we're good at. And I did a PowerPoint, and the first slide I put up there as I was building the PowerPoint, I'll just read it to you now because I think
Sure.
it's pretty key to what we're talking about. I put it up there, and it's got these big letters, and we're not doing video, but it's got this big letters that says disclaimer, kind of like warning, like a warning sign. And what I put on here, this is right after the title side. It says, the following presentation was authored by a practicing leader. The speaker does not claim to be an expert, makes mistakes regularly, and although he strives for excellence, he is a human and thus falls short of expectations more than the audience may know.
Wow.
And I think every word in there is true, right? They're like, I wrote it, and it is me to the core. One of the things that I think, one of the reasons I wanted to put it out there was, one, because it's, like I said, it's absolutely reality. And then the other one, I think, was just to kind of communicate an acceptance or an opportunity to be vulnerable, and kind of give people permission, right? Like, if the deputy chief of operations is willing to say, like, hey, I need grace and I'm going to make mistakes on a regular basis, give me a shot, it's okay for them to make mistakes too. And so, I thought it was kind of a good icebreaker, like,
I
hey,
agree.
here's this warning sign, like, you may not have signed up for me in this position, but this is what you're kind of get, and we're gonna navigate through it together, and I'm gonna make mistakes on a regular basis, and kind of giving them permission to make those same mistakes too,
Yeah.
or similar mistakes.
Wow. That is I actually wrote down right here. I'm taking notes. I know obviously we're not doing video, but I wrote down vulnerability. And then you said vulnerability. I mean, talk about, because, whether it be core values, whether it's you do an exercise where people are like, well, what's the most important thing in a leader? People always talk, integrity, honesty, someone that's vulnerable. I mean, talk about just kicking it off with just some straight up honesty, vulnerability, and you said reality. I mean, that's got everything right there. So that's, I want to try to copy that if you don't mind
Please
at some
do.
point, because that's
There's no copyright on the slide. Please do.
yet, right? Yet until this podcast episode gets published, then the whole world will be. But I
Yeah.
like that, Chief. And so how, if I can ask, I mean, well, not even just ask, but like you said, you're giving now permission to now those that follow, those that are, with you, your peers, your subordinates, even people above you, to say, you know what, the chief is willing and honest about making mistakes. And maybe it is okay that I make mistakes. And yes, of course it is. And talk about just a way to kind of, lay it out there kind of on your first day or at the beginning. And that's, I admire that. I'll just throw that out there. That's pretty awesome. I'm going to lean on one thing real quick. When you started that, you said you do officer training once a month. Wow. I've never heard of that either. I mean, are you talking like 1 hour, 3 hours? Is that a full day thing? What is that?
Yeah, so I suppose in the interest of full disclosure, we do skip July and August because we are
Wonder
fighters,
why. The only sunny months this
yeah, we
in
do
Seattle.
skip July and August. Yeah, so we meet on the first Wednesday of most months, right? With the exception of a couple for kind of high use vacation and summer breaks, but
Yeah.
we meet on the first Wednesday of every month from 9 to noon, so 3 hours. Our training division chief is in charge of kind of the agenda, the schedule, the flow of what we want to do topically every time we get together. And then we do so that, and like I said, that's all of our so we are our company officers, which are lieutenants, and then in our rank structure goes from lieutenant to battalion chief. And so we invite all of our chief officers and then all of our lieutenants, and we invite the acting company officers too that are on a promotional list. Anybody who's not working a day assignment and isn't on duty that day, we pay overtime for them to be there. That's like how important we think it is. Even those guys or gals that are on a promotional list will pay overtime to be there. It's not required. We don't like take attendance and require you to be at 80% of it, but we have a kind of a, hey, we'd love for you to be there, and unless you got
Yeah.
something going on, we'd love to see you. And then the other thing we started a couple years ago, which has been really, really good, is we take three of those trainings every year and we push them down to the shift level. So our battalion chiefs have an opportunity to get together with their five hard-barred company officers and any actors on their shift, and just get to meet, the six or eight of them get to get together and kind of chat about shift specific things that maybe are a little more topical to themes or goals or culture on their own shift, right? We try pretty hard at Gig Harbor to be, uniform in like, the 35,000 foot level. But I'm also super, it's also super important to me that those battalion chiefs have the autonomy to like keep it between the wide goalpost and
Yeah.
then run your shift how your shift best runs, right? You have anywhere from 25 to 30 humans
Yeah.
that have different needs, wants, passions, desires. They have good days, they have bad days, they have different person like personal like situations going on that are both good and bad. And so I want those battalion chiefs to have the opportunity to like lead and develop and mentor at a smaller level. So we kind of reframed officer training a little bit. And that was before me, and we've just kind of continued that moving forward. It kind of started when I was in the battalion chief office. And so that's kind of how officer training works for us. We get the big group together probably about, 7 times a year. The three shifts get together 3 times a year. Then we take a couple months off
Wow,
for summer.
that's amazing. I mean, we talk intentionality a lot on this show, and talk about the intent. Like, what are the goals? One of our goals sounds like it's prioritizing officer training, officer development, and once a month. I mean, that's a big deal. It's, I mean, I can't even get together with my buddies to play golf once a month, let alone get a bunch of, leaders of an organization all together in a room and talk about, let's how do we become better? So that's awesome. 3 hours once a month. Obviously, take several months off around here. You talked a little bit about, we're all humans. One of the other topics we'll talk about is human skills. And so we've heard this a couple of times. We actually heard this a little bit from Scott Booth, who's on the show. And I love this because hard skills of the job is is there, always has been, always will be. But we don't necessarily see human skill developments, right? In other words, we'll call them soft skills. I know it's just, terminology. I know Scott doesn't like the word soft skills because the connotation is that like they're less important because they're soft or they're weak. Obviously not the intent, but human skills of leadership. So two questions on this is number one, do you make time once a month to talk a little bit about that aspect of leadership and that aspect of development? Is do you touch on that, or is it simply like company officer training regarding tactics and stuff like that? But also to lob it out there even more vaguely is let's talk about the human skills and the importance of that in the fire service.
Yeah, I think that we effort to be vulnerable and honest. I think organizationally we want to and we can do a better job of leveraging some of our time to spend on the human skill, right? The human skills.
Absolutely.
I think, like you mentioned, the hard skills are 100% absolutely important. It is a vital piece of what we do. Pulling hose, venting a roof. Patient assessment, cardiac, like CPR, it's absolutely a piece of what we do, and we absolutely have to train on it, right? So when I talk about, or during this podcast or in other venues, when I talk about like spending more time on human skills, it's not meant to be like at the detriment to, or like less important hard skills, right? But at the same time, since I got in the fire service in 2003, my goodness, I can't tell you how many hours we spent on hard skills. And we're still going to spend a ton of it, but as a leadership core, I think that once some of those hard skills become foundational, right, and almost like subconscious, not to say that they're not perishable, we absolutely need to brush up on them, but maybe we don't need to spend as much at like as high a percentage of time on them. And in turn, we can spend some more time on kind of the human factors, the interpersonal, dynamics of kind of how our folks are working, because the reality is too, and you know this as well as I do, that our firefighters, we got crews on the street right now, and while they are using their hard skills, they're also using their human skills,
Absolutely,
right?
every day.
Those men and women that Gig Harbor have out on the street right now, they are unlikely to encounter a situation where they only have to use their hard skills, right?
Absolutely.
They are going to have to use them in conjunction with the human skills, and they in many cases they probably need to even be more intentional about those human skills, because those hard skills are going to come more innate, and those hard skills that they're using, they are using them to like manage a process or like an inanimate object, like a cardiac monitor or a hose line or a pump panel, right? It's the eye contact, vocal inflection, tone, word choice, like situational awareness, of our company officers watching how interactions are happening with the public and with patients. Those are those human skills that are getting exercised equally as often. I just don't know that we spend as much time training on them.
I agree. Well, you said something so key because obviously EMS, right? I mean, EMS, arguably 75, 80% of, especially in our departments of here in Washington, but across the fire service, it's like when we're doing EMS, we're obviously interacting with patients. And when we're interacting with patients, is obviously, yes, we need to be utilizing our hard skills to take blood pressures, vitals, all that. But when we're talking about questioning, when we're talking about providing a level of, showing empathy and compassion with our patients, we're talking human skills, right? And the more competent, we'll say, at those things, that just the better, service that we're going to be delivering to those customers, those patients. But then also on the fire scene, we'll say, or on the emergency scene, it's just not only to the citizens, we'll say, but how you're interacting with your crew members, right? I mean, that the human skills, the way you give orders, the way you accept orders, the way you communicate is, the human skill factor, right? Are we raising our voice? Are we, short-tempered? Are we receptive? That's all going to play a factor in how we then proceed to then, meet the objective of whatever it is. So I love how you say that. So a question I have is, as far as a Gig Harbor, is it like human skill development? Is that a part of what you guys are, incorporating in some training? And if so, what does that look like?
Yeah, I think what I would say is that at the company level, the human skill development of like mentoring and developing people, I think is a core function of what our company officers are doing, because I think we have invested in them informally in like almost like informal processes to like instill that those are that that's important, right? So you need to we're asking our company officers to, spend time with their people, learning about their people, understanding what their learning styles are and how they like to learn and how they like to be presented with growth opportunities. But I don't know that we have really developed like a formal kind of roadmap for how we want to navigate through the training of on the human skills side. I think everybody, well, not everybody, but probably most people in your audience are familiar with like, EMS OTEP, right? Like ongoing training and education, right? And so one of the things that's super important to me in over the next, and we're looking at, the next three to 5 years is developing a more formal OTEP, if you will, but ongoing training and education program for our officers. And the goal is to do a couple things. One is to identify our industry best practices on the hard skill side, so we make sure that we're consistent in how we apply those on the street. The other thing is to spend some time in quote unquote, like maybe out of industry, but industry best practices on the human skill side of it. Like, how do we want to train our people on how to take care of our external customer at the task level, right? Our firefighters, paramedics, lieutenants that are out there doing the work on a daily basis. And then also, how do we want to train our officers to mentor and develop and lift up the next generation of leaders within our organization as it pertains to those human skills? And then I think the last thing that it's going to do as we navigate through it, or I hope it's going to do, although I know hope's not a strategy, but that I hope it's going to do is it's going to help give our emerging or aspiring leaders kind of a roadmap of like, what does it take to be a leader in the Gig Harbor Fire Department, right? What does Gig Harbor Fire Medic One expect of its leaders, so that as I'm navigating through my career roadmap, what do I need to do to get there? And so I think that's, it's an opportunity for us to kind of lay that out for our folks.
Wow, that roadmap, I like that. I mean, I've never, as you talk about the OTEP, as you talk about like JPRs or whatever you will, the certain benchmarks that need to always be in place, annual training, quarterly training, competencies in your skill set. I mean, talking about building a roadmap and what it looks like at Gig Harbor Fire, but more even in general on, what are we looking for regarding, say, human skill development? I mean, that's awesome. It sounds like Gig Harbor, because I've never heard, a lot of this stuff that what you're talking about. It sounds like Gig Harbor is kind of leading the way in terms of trying to be very innovative in a lot of this stuff, and I love it. I'm gonna, after this show, you might hear from me every periodically to say, "Hey, how are you guys doing out there?" And at the ELA, at the Executive Leadership Academy last year, we were tasked to do officer development, and we had our small group, part of our cohort, take on the adaptive challenge of what does officer development look like in the region. And we looked at it. There's six of us in our group. We said, "Why don't we just change that to just leadership development or leader?" So we're trying to, instead of having just company officers, how about just the leader and the development? Because that's the engineer, that's senior firefighter, that's firefighter, it's recruit. And so it was kind of like it helped bridge the gap between like it's not just hard skills and it's not just company officers. Let's encompass a little bit more of everyone and everything. And that was just a get it going. We just started a conversation. No, none of the departments that worked on it have anything implemented nor a plan, I think, at this moment. So I just love that there are departments out there that are kind of looking toward this and going to start building something with a hopeful plan, you said, and I hope it's not a strategy like you said, but it always helps 3 to 5 years. So I love
Yeah,
that.
and I think one of the coolest things about when I think when I'm th when you think about developing a program or like what do you need to put something like this together? And again, I don't have all the answers, right? We're kind of like learning as we go, or we're going to learn as we go in the next 3 to 5 years. But one of the coolest things I think is that to spend time on the human skill, it doesn't require like a prop. It doesn't require a shooting tower.
Good
It
point.
doesn't require an acquired structure. What it requires is two or more people who are willing to be intentional about just being in community with each other and navigating through like human dynamics. That's what it takes, right? It's a coffee table, it's a back patio, it's a around the station, it's
Absolutely.
It can be lots more than that, right? It can be the
Absolutely.
conference, it can be the consultant, it can be all those things that are important, but at the bare minimum, It's like, well, shoot, it's awfully hard to go pull an inch and three quarter by myself and then load it back on the engine by myself. Right. Or even with
Right.
two people, when we had two person engine companies, several years ago, like, but this is just two people sitting on a coffee table talking about it because they care.
You're so right. You're so right. Talk about, because I've stressed this at the company level. It's like, because sometimes we'll have drills, we'll have busy days, like we'll have a planned out day, and then we have four calls before lunch. It's like, okay, that whole planning training is not, it's not happening now. And then, so you'll push it a day, you'll push it to the night, or you push it to the next shift or whatever. But what you're in, and I'll always stress, like, there's always things that we could do that require nothing. And that's
Yeah.
exactly what you're talking about. These types of things, these innovations moving forward, it doesn't need to say, well, now, all right, I love this plan, but we cannot do it because our biggest barrier is we need $500,000 to build a tower. No, you need nothing but, like you said, like two people, three people, a willing audience, if you will, to say, let's get together and do this because we could do it sitting right here, right now. So the question I have is, are, we'll say company officers, but let's just say more the department itself, receptive to, where this is going in terms of like human skill development, adding these types of trainings into the future of Gig Harbor, Fire and Medic One?
Yeah, I think they are. Jury's out, right? We're, like, at least in my, like, me and my position, we're 4 months into this whole ride. But yeah, and it didn't start with me, right? I think we have current and past leaders in our organization who have who've given us examples, right? Given
Yes,
us
of
examples
course.
and roadmaps on like the importance of how to treat people, right? And I think that when we talk to our folks and you get them in a super safe and comfortable environment, and you have, honest conversations about like, hey, like I think we should do this, and do you guys think this is important? Like, am I crazy? Right? Am I drinking from like a crazy stream or something? And
We all
and it's
are.
like, and the answers that that I get are no, it's not crazy. Maybe it isn't as fun, or it doesn't have like the instant gratification that pulling a hose or cutting a hole in the roof or but yeah, it's absolutely important. And at the end of the day, I think it makes us all better, right? And more well-rounded and more better prepared just in life in general, right?
Agreed. Now we get to talk about leadership and management, because there's all kinds of quotes out there. There's sayings, there's authors talks about, leadership is very different than management. And just because you're a good manager doesn't mean you're a good leader, and vice versa. All true statements, but they're both necessary, right? Like, there need to be great leaders in an organization. There also need to be great managers. So let's just lob it out there, because I know there's different philosophies or different ways of explaining or describing the difference between leadership and management. But can you talk a little bit about leadership versus management, but how they're both necessary to be effective in any industry?
Yeah, sure. I think that the fire service isn't unique from the leadership perspective, but I would say that the call them like the unicorn, him or her, the unicorn leader, right? Whether it's in private or public, industry, the unicorn leader is an excellent leader and an excellent manager, comma, that really understands when to apply both of those tactics to a given situation or to a given like circumstance, right? And so the thing that I share with our officers, and I shared in January when I started, and I've shared at the kitchen table as a battalion chief or as a company officer, I didn't create it, right? Like you were sharing, like, this is out there. Like, leadership and management is management is for like inanimate objects and processes and things, right? Like, people are like need to be led. People don't get managed. I think what can happen is when, as leaders, when we get really busy and we get really overwhelmed and we get stressed, we revert to managing, right? We revert to getting things off of our plate and checking the box on Microsoft Outlook on our to-do list, right? Like, we're just moving things off the plate. And when people feel managed, though, I think what happens is that they don't feel appreciated, valued, and supported. And then the leader can't accomplish what they maybe set out to accomplish because they need these teammates. They need these people to help them get where they want to go. And people that feel managed and not led, I think really struggle to stay like committed to the
Yeah,
cause,
agreed.
right?
Agreed. 100%. And so let's talk about that, because you mentioned like leadership about people, managing more about processes and things. And the unicorn has the ability to be very effective and efficient at both. But in reality, not every leader of an organization, doesn't matter the industry, is it going to be necessarily both? So obviously, teams, it's not just an executive team, not just fire chiefs and the executive team, but having a diverse team, right? Because like, and we could use the diverse team of a crew, right? Company officer, engineer, firefighter, we'll say, or firefighter, engineer, or sorry, firefighter, paramedic, officer, all have a unique skill set, right? A lot are very focused, task level, very competent. Others a little bit better at just leading people, and one might be just, but it's all necessary to make the crew effective. So if a crew will say, or a team will say, doesn't have, all the leaders on that 3 or 5 or 10 person team that's just unicorns, how important is it that that crew be then diverse in their skill sets to then become a team that is super efficient and effective in delivering whatever service that they're trying to deliver?
Yeah, I think it's vitally important. I think if I think about, and I would challenge anybody, if you think about the best teams that you've ever been on, could have been maybe it's a sports team, maybe it's a crew that at the fire station, maybe it's an executive team if you're a chief officer. If you think about the best teams that you were ever on, and you start to either think of or be intentional about writing down the people that were on the team and the strengths and the weaknesses of those people. There's certainly going to be some commonality, but there's also going to be some difference in diversity, right? And so I think about some of the sports teams I was on growing up, and I wasn't thinking about it when you're in seventh grade playing baseball, right? But like you look back on it and you think about it, we had some really good pitchers and we had some really good outfielders, right? And the pitcher was not the best person to be in the outfield, and the outfielder is not the best person to be in the pitcher. It didn't make them any less valuable, right?
Exactly.
Sure, there's the unicorn, right? That is the pitcher, the fielder, the hitter, and the outfielder, right? That can do it all. And that's awesome because those are superstars, and you need those people to be galvanizing on your team. But there was people that were great in left field or center field that weren't great catchers behind the plate. And that didn't make them any less valuable. And so I think spending time in relationship with your teams, your company, your executive team, and identifying what you think your strengths and weaknesses are, right? Being vulnerable enough to share your weaknesses, and then being confident enough to share your strength, and then also having a team that is willing to, agree or push back, not push back in like push back in a it's still a team environment. Be like, I totally agree with you. And even, I think, some of those leaders that are vulnerable enough to say, like, maybe instead of me sharing what I think my strengths and weaknesses are, maybe you can help share what you think my strengths and weaknesses are,
Absolutely.
right? Like
Absolutely.
perception's reality a little bit. And then,
It
but
is.
also, we say that kind of tongue in cheek, like perception's reality. But are you kind of saying like it's just kind of what somebody else thinks? But there's also some truth in the statement too, right?
Agreed.
Where it is real. It
It
is
is.
actually it may be a weakness for you.
Exactly. And it's real, like you said, to in other people's eyes, right? Like just because I feel like, we'll say that I'm really good at something, it may not be the reality. Other people might see it as, well, you actually need some development in that arena, or my weaknesses. I feel like I'm very weak in this arena. Some people might view it as like you actually perform very well and you're actually, strong in that arena. You might want to develop other things. But I think this all ties back into human skills, right? As we talk about like trying to seek feedback from somebody else, or trying to gain, bring someone to the plate or someone to the table to, share their ideas. That all comes back to that relationship building connection and just that human factor of, this is, we're talking about the human game here. We're talking less about that hard skill. One thing that I also want to recognize or just highlight what you said is matching strengths with responsibilities. I heard that recently. It's just, it was key. Doesn't make someone less valuable because they can't do X, because they might be doing something very strong in Y, and there's no one on that team that could perform in the Y. Or Chief, is there something, what we try to talk about on this show? We talk about things that might have propelled someone, maybe a failure. We talked about failures and flaws as well earlier. Was there a moment that you can, you always say the word pivot, but we'll say a circumstance, a situation, something in your career that may not have went the way you thought it would, maybe an assignment that you didn't aspire, but something that kind of just was like, oh, here I am. But now you can credit that to your success.
So I that's a really it was a really good question. I'm glad you posed it to me before the podcast because it gave me a little bit of time to think about it. I
Sorry.
don't know that I would have given you the same answer. In fact, I know I wouldn't have given you the same answer on the spot that I'm going to give you now. And partially it's because I think I've had like several moments in my 20-year career, 20 almost tw you know a little over 20-year career that have been like I'll call them like guiding or shaping. They like push me a little bit here, push me a little bit over here. But I don't know that I would have called them like a pivot moment necessarily. But I was thinking about it today, getting ready to sit down with you. And I think the thing that came to my mind, and it's kind of like taking a multiple choice test, like go with your gut, right? If it feels like
They're
that's what you're
all
gonna
there,
bring
but
up, bring
yeah.
up. Yep. Cool. I had a super memorable call, 911 call that I ran pretty early in my career. It was probably well over, probably 13, 14 years ago now. It's I don't remember the date, but I definitely remember exactly what it was, where I was, and the situation. And so I ran a call. I was driving the medic unit at the time. I'm an EMT, never been a paramedic, but our paramedic units run one medic and one EMT on them. And so I was driving for my partner. We went to a motor vehicle accident. I didn't have kids at the time, so yeah, definitely would have been more than 14 years ago. Ran a call. We had a child that the secondary information was just child had been ejected from a vehicle, was like multiple vehicle collision. And outside of that, you didn't have a whole lot of information, right? Like you kind of knew you were going into some kind of like level of like chaos. You knew it was serious, but you didn't really know what you're getting into. And so my partner and I got there first. The medic was there first. The engine wasn't too far behind us, but we got there and we kind of went into the our internal, procedure of like first medic unit, driver of the medic unit, triage, right? Like, and start, and the medic starts triaging. We just start, triaging people, right? And parked in middle of the road, right in front of us was a citizen that was had a child with them in the middle of the street. Couldn't tell the age, couldn't tell the severity, but the child was in the middle of the street. And I remember my partner said, "Hey, you go check on the kid, and I'm gonna go over to the car, and we're just gonna kind of start working the system, right, and making sure we get everything accounted for." And I think that the child was probably about five, maybe four, five or six, kind of in that range, and was not in good shape, real bad shape. And I had this moment, never had it in my career up until that point, and I had this moment where I kind of froze, like I didn't really know what to do. Or at least that was the sense, right? Like I knew ABCs and I knew CPR and like I knew, but it was like this moment where I think I honestly, if I'm being vulnerable, like I felt a little overwhelmed. Like I'm not sure that I prepared myself to see this visual, right? Like four, like 5-year-old child, unconscious, barely breathing, not in good shape. I'm by myself because my partner's triaging, doing the things we need to do, waiting for the engine company to get there. And I had this sense where I kind of froze. And I remember, looking back after the call, and thinking, man, I don't know if this is true or not, but I kind of felt like I was a little bit unprepared. Like I just wasn't ready for that. And so the pivot moment for me was I was telling myself, like, I don't ever want to feel like that again. Right. So as much as I could avoid it, right?
Absolutely.
You know as well as I do that there's things that you see in the job that you're like, man, I didn't really prepare myself for that, or that's not why I do this job, right? But generally speaking, I do remember having that feeling where like, man, I never want to do that again. I never want to feel like that again. And so I said, what am I gonna do? Like, Nick, what are you gonna do about it? And I said, well, I think what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna seek out the smartest paramedics we have. And I'm going to talk to them about how I can be prepared next time. I'm going to seek out the smartest, like, my mentors within the fire service company officers, like, hey, have you ever gone through something like that? Right. And can you help me like navigate how I can not find myself in that spot where I'm like, man, what am I supposed to do here? Seeking out people outside of the fire service just from the like, whether it was cathartic or just informal, like actual therapy that was happening for me, right? Like, I don't want to feel like this again. What do I need to do? How do I better prepare myself? So I think that, and that stuck with me the whole time, right? Just the idea that, like, not that the tragedy has stuck with me, although, like, I'm never going to forget it, but that feeling of like, all right, I don't want to feel unprepared again. So what do I need to do? So every step in the or like in my career journey, preparing for being a lieutenant, preparing for being a battalion chief, and preparing for being a deputy chief, like, what do I need to be doing to try and limit the possibility of me feeling like I'm not ready to go? And then the other thing that came out of that that I think I want to share that I think is really key is that got some really good advice from several people. And when you get it from like multiple people, you're kind of like, this is probably really good advice, right? And the advice was, as much as you prepare, you are probably never gonna feel like you're absolutely ready to take the next step, right? You're not gonna, the chief of the fire department or the ops chief that's promoting lieutenant. Like, when I think about it, like, I'm not, as the ops chief, I'm not going into it promoting those that are already equipped, right? I'm promoting the people and choosing the people, and then I'm gonna spend time and investing in them and equipping them as we go, right? So I'm never, that was some really good advice to me, was like, yes, absolutely, prepare for the job you want, prepare for the job you have, but don't think you're gonna have it all figured out before you get
Absolutely.
there, and we'll train you as you go. So
That feeling of unprepared, right? Whether the listeners today have that feeling, like, and maybe there's some listeners here that are like, I'm prepared for it all. There's something in all of us that has a sense of, there's some things that I probably aren't going to be fully prepared for, or there's some things out there that I won't know I was unprepared for until you're in that circumstance. But I think the key takeaway that what you're talking about here is you there was a moment, and I'm sure at that point in time, say you were on the job for 5 years, that you were competent and felt good in the position that you were in at 5 years, right? Had it not been you on that day, had it been just the other shift, or you were on a shift trade, we'll say, and you were off, you never would have experienced that moment to then get you to the point where you say, I was unprepared for that, and now I need to start doing X. But the takeaway here is we may or may not run into those six situations, right? And I guess what's key to highlight is what is your weakness now? Like, what are the listeners? What are those weaknesses now? Because it's hard. You can't quantify a negative. I know that we've talked about that here too. Is like, if I start preparing for X amount of things, that's great. I won't. And then at that point, you won't know or won't run into that call, we'll say, or situation where you felt unprepared to then propel you to say, you know what? I don't want to run into that situation ever again. But that's a good thing, right? That because of what you've done up front. So in this case, it's about what are your weaknesses to the listeners? What are those things? Work on those now, focus and develop those so you don't run into those situations where you're like, wow, I don't ever want to have that feeling again of unpreparedness. So what you're doing, and I'll highlight this part, you said limit the chance or limit the percentage. Because certainly, if I think of 10 weaknesses that I have right now and I focus the next 2 to 5 years working on all those 10 weaknesses, I still may run into a situation where I have that feeling of unpreparedness. But what you're saying is focus on those things, limit that chance or probability of being unprepared in a situation. And you do that so by identifying your weaknesses, having some humility, develop those. And the key thing that I think you said was you reached out to the best paramedics in this case to then develop you. Like you actually sought the from other people. It wasn't just, I got to study this harder. You actually went out and told people, asked them to help develop you so you wouldn't be in that situation again. Because I'm sure you probably shared the story with those paramedics, right? And those other EMTs and senior people. All right. We're still talking action items. You were going to talk to two groups, your chief. The first one being a new firefighter. What's some advice that you would give to them to help propel them early in their career?
I think the first thing I would share with them is just reinforcing to them, I think you brought up a good venue, right? At their graduation, right? They're just fresh out of the fire academy. They think they're like, I'm brand new. I haven't even had a day on the job, right? And the last thing they're probably thinking about themselves as is leaders. But from the first day they put the uniform on and show up to work, the community thinks of them as leaders.
Agreed.
So what I would share with them, not from an element or not from an not from a position of like where they should feel stressed about it, but I would just reinforce to them that, hey, you are leaders, right? you're going to be presented with situations and you are going to be a leader to somebody, right? You think about like, hey, you're going to spend a bunch of time, being the one that's doing the patient assessment, being the one that's talking to the homeowner, that's being the one that's doing, the very functional, foundational task level things. To them, to the people you're talking to, you are a leader. So I would encourage them just to know that they're a leader. The other thing that I would encourage them to do is I would encourage them to push their formal leaders. And what I mean by push is to push those leaders to lead them, right? And that's a little bit going back to what I talked about in leading and managing. Like I would push the leaders, say, hey, like, man, I want to be led. I want to be taught. I want to be encouraged. I want to feel valued and appreciated, right? Not from the standpoint of like I'm more important than anybody else here, but like I really want to learn and I really want to be really, really good at what I do, and I really want you to teach me and lead me and how to get there. And then I would share with them along those lines and be vulnerable enough to tell your leader that you're feeling managed, if you're feeling managed, right? And there's a time and a place and a level of respect that that our formal leaders have earned and should be given, right? I'm not contending that that should be like given away, right? They are the company officer, they are the captain, they are the lieutenants, and that absolutely like warrants a level of respect, but that doesn't mean that you can't professionally, quietly, but intentionally say like, hey, I'm just not feeling like I'm feeling managed, I'm just feeling like I want more, and I know you're the guy or the gal to give it to me, and I just want it, and I want to dig in. And so that's what I would share with them is just be vulnerable enough to ask, like, I don't think I'm getting what I need, and I want it to be you, and I want you to lead me.
Oh, that's powerful. That's powerful. I mean, that's what I'll say on that. That's powerful. You talk vulnerability, honesty, and then I'm just going to add this element. The company officer must be receptive to that, right? In their role, right? Because it's one thing for to have, and we want that, right? Let's just go ahead and say we want our newer firefighters to come to us and tell us what are your needs, what can we do or I do to help, encourage you to help you be successful and reach your potential. Like we want that. Let's just go and say we all need that and want that. But the company officer must be receptive to that. And so that's so key. I love that. Honesty and vulnerabilities, I think that's what we're talking all day today about. So then let's just jump right to emerging leaders, right? This could be company officers, but this is someone that's been there a few years, someone that's maybe taking on enough a new formal role in leadership. What's something that they need to be doing or thinking about or working on to grow their leadership potential?
One of the things that I shared with a couple of the folks that had an opportunity to do promotional interviews with, kind of in my new operations chief role, and then I also shared with our company officers when I met with them at the first of the year, is that mentoring and developing your people is not optional. So if your desire was to get into the role, the formal leadership role, lieutenant. For us, battalion chief, could be captain or deputy chief or anything in any other organization. But if your motivation was the bugle or the bugles or the bar or the bars, I think you're in it for the wrong reasons, right? That can absolutely be a motivating factor, but that cannot be the driving factor. If you want to be kind of go back to what we talked about earlier, if you strive to be the unicorn leader, which I'm not a unicorn leader, right? I'm an aspiring unicorn leader,
That's
but I'm not that. But if you want to be the high level leader and the high level manager and know the difference of when to apply those tactics, your motivation cannot be the position or the status. It's got to be the people. And so what I share with them is, if you want to be a leader, formal leader in our organization, mentoring and developing is like it's pay to play. It's not optional. We started doing, I'll give you a functional example of that. We instituted an officer task book for our officers that want to test for lieutenant battalion chief. You have to complete a task book to be able to act in the role, to be able to swing something, some places call it swing up or whatever the different organizations call it. And one of the things we instituted with that this year is you had to have a sponsor. right? So if you're a firefighter that wants to test for the permission of lieutenant, that you have to have a sponsor that's essentially going to help walk you through that book, right? To make sure that you are getting what you need. They're, well, shocker, they're leading you through the book, right?
Yes.
And what I shared with my company officers was the people on your crew that want to take the promotional test, you're their sponsor. So if somebody comes to you and says, like, hey, like, I want to take the test, I need a sponsor, and you're my frontline supervisor, you're my sponsor, like, saying no is not optional. Like, that's not, like, you cannot do that, right? So, like, well, I don't, like, if I'm a lieutenant or like, well, I'm not sure that I have the skills. Well, then we're going to get you the skills. And we're going to help you learn how to get there, but being a mentor and a developer of people, not optional. Yeah.
Optional.
The other thing that I would share with them is, as much as possible, be consistent. Be consistent, because if you were, and I would share with people, like, you probably should have started being consistent long before you ever promoted into the position. But if you were the, like, fast and loose on the rules firefighter, but then you get promoted to a company officer and you want to be the taskmaster, or you want to hold people accountable to the rules, we have
Work.
smart people. They're going to see right through that. So you just got to be consistent.
Yeah.
Be who you are and deal with the consequence,
Yes.
right?
Yeah,
One way or the
absolutely.
other.
Be authentic. Be authentic as well. And hopefully authentic is real and real is consistent. And that would be the unicorn-ish, if you will. But I'm not going to highlight too much because you said it well. What I will highlight is just what you said. Mentoring and developing people is not optional. I know mandatory and requirements are harsh words sometimes that we don't like to float around, in the fire stations. Oh, you have to do this, you shall do this. But let's leave it at this, that mentoring and developing people is not optional. The Leadership Challenge, Chief, is perhaps my most favorite part of the show, simply because we get to continue the conversation of leadership in the fire service. So this leadership challenge allows us to ask you, is there a leader out there that you would like us to reach out to bring onto the show to continue to add perspective on leadership in the fire service?
Yeah, I do have a name, and I'm really hopeful that we're able to, or you're able to get it scheduled with him, because he's as solid as they come, and I think that he's a really good fire service leader, but he is a better human, and I think that he would be he'd be awesome. And so he's a captain for a neighboring fire department. His name's Nick Harris. Yes, he does have a cool name, right, Nick? I get it, right? But that's not why
I see the theme here, human skills and Nick.
That's not why I nominated him. So Nick Harris is just a great human, and I think he'd be great and offer some great perspective. So I've known Nick for a long, long time. Nick was a youth group leader for me when I was in high school, and he was in college, and I'd never met him before, and we've been friends now, and we're in the same industry. We've been friends now for almost 30 years. And so I think he'd be a real great addition to the podcast. He is a captain, so he, from a formal leadership position, but he's also a dad and a husband and just a good human. So I think he's leading every day of his life. So
Absolutely. What department is Nick?
he
I can
works for
ask.
West Pierce Fire and
Oh,
Rescue.
West Pierce. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So what I'll do is I'll reach out to Captain Nick Harris. I'll gather his information from you and see if he'd be willing to take the other Nick on his leadership challenge here on the kitchen table. So I just want to say I appreciate your time here, Chief, for taking up this in short time. I think we were just emailed each other like a week or two ago, maximum, and you said let's do it. So I love it. So thank you for taking the time today on this beautiful day. I hope you get outside. But before we officially close on the kitchen table, and what are your lasting leadership thoughts that you would like the listeners to walk away with as we close today?
Kind of like that question at the end of an interview, right, man? Where they're like, "Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about yourself?" And you're like, "Man, I feel like if I don't say something, then I'm really leaving something on the table."
Not grading you.
Yeah, no, that's all good. So what I would share is just this thought, this couple sentences, and it would be, whether you're an emerging leader, whether you want to be a leader, whether you're a formal leader within your organization of any rank. Or you're the brand new firefighter, like I said, that the community sees as leaders from day one. I would say that every day you have an opportunity to make a difference. to make someone feel appreciated, valued, understood, and cared for. And that every day you will encounter people who are battling through something you might know nothing about. Compassion does not take any clinical competence. It only takes intentionality that says, I care and I'm here. They may not remember the words you said, but they will always remember how you made them feel. And we lead people and we manage processes. It's never the opposite.
Thank you for tuning in today to the Kitchen Table. We truly hope you found this time valuable. We hope that we've inspired you to take action, to lead, and to spread the leadership conversation. Till next time, be safe, be intentional, stay curious.